Welcome to the 96 Monkey on My Back podcast. Read the blog momcomics.com and mail us at mombcast@gmail.com to leave comments and contributions. Tonight on the pod, we talk around our spinning orders, discuss the no news, and this week we give the spotlight over to a special guest and the relaunch of an old favourite. Momcast, the comic book podcast that's doing for comics what phone pies do for 80-year-old media barons. On the pod tonight are... Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Jane.
I'm Christine, and I'm the...
Hey. Hello, Christine. Welcome, guest.
Thank you.
So we should. It's nice to have you back. We should say you're Christine from the other Murdoch papers. We introduce you as on the podcast, don't we? The excellent Daredevil blog.
Thank you.
And of course, this week, Daredevil number one came out. So.
Woo!
Woo! Woo! I didn't want to miss out on the woos. We should also explain there's one voice that isn't here this week. That's because Nick is sunning himself on the island of Lesbos,
which fantastic.
It's very nice, which I believe, if I look at the Momcast map, is just off the coast of Canada.
Everything's off the coast of Canada.
Canada is the center of my world.
It's the ice hockey world, but.
That's true. I should like ice hockey more than I do. And we're also, it's probably going to sound a little bit weirder, the podcast, than normal, because obviously we're all recording in separate rooms this week, which we almost never do.
Oh, so Jane's in a separate room too?
I am, yes.
Oh, okay. Back at the asylum, are you?
No. Yeah. I've got an hour.
You say that before every podcast, though, to be honest with you, but it's usually your hunger that's causing you to say that as you stick your fingers up at me and Nick while we sit there procrastinating too long, stopping you getting...
And all that waiting to eat has turned me insane, so...
Well, there you are.
Yeah.
Okay, well, normally we do our week, so we should. What have you been doing this week, Jane?
This week, I had to go back to work. Boo. I had exams, boo.
How did they go?
Oh, great.
Good, I'm pleased to hear it.
Yeah. And I went to a country fair and bought lots of olives.
A country fair?
Yeah, one of them.
Nice. Well, what did you see? Was there just market stalls, or were there animals that you could pet?
There are animals. They had bees. They're not very good for petting.
Bees are shit animals at a country show, to be honest with you. They're not very exciting to look at all, and they're quite stingy.
Yeah, they're in a glass box thing, but they made nice honey, so we bought some nice honey from the bees.
That's nice of you.
We saw rabbits, and they're in hutches, and they had really great big rabbits, and they were super fluffy, but they didn't like you poking your fingers in the cage.
Rabbits are very bitey, they're quite vicious animals, actually.
I know. And as a young child, I once was bitten by a rabbit and it made me bleed and I cried. But I built tolerance, so...
I was once stabbed by a rabbit, Jane, so...
top trumps again.
Yeah, I think you'll find that my story is much more disturbing than yours.
Later on the same day when I was a child, a goose bit the same finger.
I think James may have just dreamed that up after watching Search for the Holy Grail.
No, not at all.
Murder was, rabbit.
Later that day, I was shot in the knee by a badger. It was a bad day.
He was crazed with TB, wasn't he?
He was. He'd been giving some cows some TB and he decided to kneecap me. Vicious bastards.
So, yeah, that's my week. How about... Sorry?
No, go on.
I was going to say, how about you? But you're going to say something else.
I was going to ask Chris, but I'll tell you about mine because it's been really interesting. I've been doing nothing of any note at all. I read some comics. That was nice. It was a rainy weekend. I didn't do much, which was very pleasant. I've had some very busy weekends for Scarlett's birthday, so we sat around and didn't do an awful lot. I was very pleased for my brother-in-law, though. I don't normally condone betting, but it was the British Open this weekend. And he put £5 on Darren Clark to win at 150-1, and his bet came in. So he's flushed with cash at the moment, so I'm very jealous. It was his stag weekend this weekend as well, which I wasn't able to go to. So that probably helped pay for that, so I was very pleased. Is this what it's got to? That I, when we get to the My Week section, my week is so bereft of interest that I'm actually talking about my family members instead.
Does Scarlett have her first birthday? Has it been a year already?
It has been a year already. Oh, it's gone really quick.
Wow. And
the house is full of really noisy toys.
Yay!
The favourite of which is actually the one Jane and Nick. now there's a Freudian mom slip if there ever
wrong,
was one.
Yeah.
Actually, that's almost as good as the Freudian slip you made yesterday, Chris, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, I've actually made that slip before. But it's really because the R and the T are right next to each other on the keyboard. So it's more of a finger slip than a Freudian slip. But okay, whatever.
I'd love to criticise, but someone who's constantly making typos on Twitter, I haven't got a leg to stand on, to be honest with you.
So, do I tell you about my week?
You should tell me about your week. I've done nothing. You should definitely tell us about yours.
I go back to work next Wednesday, so I'm home. Being very domestic, I've been looking after my I've been checking the my dad's mail for 2 or 3 days because he's traveling, and he lives really close by, and I picked about a gallon, or, well, 4 liters, for those of us on the metric system, from his cherry tree today. So I made cherry pie, and I have cherry pie filling for, like, 2 more pies, and that's, I've only actually, you know, prepared 40% of the cherries I picked, so... my whole kitchen is very red or pinkish, but it's delicious. What else did I do? I went to the recycling station center thing we have, and kept my finger on a broken mirror that my cat broke a few. Yeah, it's like almost cut like the tip of my finger off, which was very, very painful. So I'd like, you know, take a rag and like wrap it around my hand and then continue throwing things out, you know, to the dumpsters. I really wanted to get that done. So I'm home now. It stopped bleeding. It's fine. What else did I do this week? I was downtown the other day just having hanging with my best friend and her son, who's also just over a year old. He's 14 months. He's a lot of fun. He gave me a drawing that he made. I'm not sure he knew he was making it for me at the time he was making it, but it's delightful. It's got, you know, sketches. It's in a, you know, ink pen. That's all his mom had. So I'm very happy with that. It's actually up on my refrigerator. But that's about as much fun as I've had this week. And I've been cleaning out my closet and doing random things like that. So
that's very nice. I'm very worried about your finger, though. If you suddenly go very quiet.
No, it's fine. But it was actually quite deep. It was like... Because it hurts to cut yourself, but it was like more of a burning sensation. I'm thinking, like, did I hit a nerve? You know, no, it's fine.
Yeah, ow.
Can we call the medical services in Sweden? Does anyone have the number just in case?
Phone up Canada.
I think that the number in the EU for it's the same everywhere, like 112 for emergency services. But I really don't think I need it. It's just a mild throbbing.
Okay, well, I'll take Jane's advice. Worst comes to the worst, I'll just phone the Canadian Embassy and I'm sure they'll be able to help. They'll send a Mountie round or something for you. Okay, that was all. We never get through our weeks that quickly. I'm still getting used to having the three-way Skype conversation. I'm now taking my hat off to anyone who does podcasts like this on a regular basis. I'm finding the lack of face-to-face contact most discombobulating.
Yeah, You're sounding a little bit nervous there.
Am I?
No, just sort of like, is anybody listening to me now that I'm... Yeah.
I'm just drunk and paranoid, that's all.
No change.
No, Ginger, I'm always drunk and paranoid when we do the podcast. Hello, monkeys. It's a slightly damp George Beedham here. I'm kind of busy this week sorting myself out for the MCM Expo in Manchester, which is not this weekend, but the weekend after. So I'm recording this on my walk home, where it is throwing it down. So if you can hear that, I apologise. I was going to talk about comic book movie trailers, because that seems to have been all over the internet this week. The first one I saw was Dark Knight, which is looking pretty cool. I can't really complain about that. Bane looks pretty badass. It's Christopher Nolan, so I assume it's going to be a great film. Then I've sort of seen Avengers, but it was a very bad recording, and I saw a few clips of Thor and Captain America, but couldn't really hear what was going on. It looks pretty good. I mean, I've enjoyed the Marvel films so far, so I'll probably watch that as well. The one that kind of annoyed me a bit, though, was the Spider-Man trailer. Now, the trailer itself is fine. You know, you see bits and pieces and the new Spider-Man costume, which I'm sure some fanboys are going to be wittering on about, but don't bother me. Would have been nice to... No, I don't really have any complaints about the costume. The gold eyes are a bit odd, but, you know, it's a film. They've got a... yeah, but they seem to be doing his origin again. And I just don't get that at all. Everybody knows, like, surely it's not just me and comic book people like yourselves who know that Spider-Man is a Spider-Man because he was bitten by a spider. Yeah, I don't get, unless they're going to try and sort of introduce Doc Connors, aka the Lizard, into his origin a bit and make him a bit more of a integral part of the universe, I don't know. But I guess it's a relaunch, so they'll, you know, do what they like. I'm not really judging it yet, because, you know, it's a trailer. It's, what, 2 minutes of footage? And that's kind of harsh to judge something on that. Yeah, I'm getting soaked, so I'm going to leave it there. Read my comic at notregret.com/Jambo. I hope I get home soon. I'll probably talk to you next week. Bye. Shall we talk about some comics?
Yes.
Okay, Jane, you're going to have to remind me who we decided was going first before
you.
The podcast. I didn't write it down. Normally you have stuff written down. I've been really disorganised, not written anything down. Okay, this week... there's one book that I won't talk about that I've read that I enjoyed quite a lot. But it was another big Flashpoint week for me. First one was the second of three Wonder Woman and the Furies. It says on the cover very boldly that you do not mess with her. And you certainly don't. I think the thing that I'm finding most confusing reading Wonder Woman and the Furies is I'm used to her being... a relatively benevolent figure, and certainly very peaceful woman that wants to solve conflicts rather than cause them. But here she is, a very vengeful and angry woman indeed. After, obviously, I think Jane and I talked about the last issue of this book, where Aquaman and her were due to be wed, and her mother Hippolyta was killed in a conspiracy between some of the Atlanteans and the Wonder Woman's fellow Amazonians.
Amazonians.
Yeah.
I didn't even read Wonder Woman. Amazonians, sounds about right.
Yeah, no, they're definitely Amazonians. I know, I was getting confused because she's got her chums that are the Furies, hasn't she, as well? So I was getting confused. So there's conspiracy amongst some of those to kill Hippolyta. To stop the wedding between Aquaman and Wonder Woman that would have seen peace between their two peoples. And thus this massive war across Europe begun. And you see a little bit more about how that came to be in this issue, adds a little bit of flesh onto the bones of that story. And we also come to understand how England and most of Western Europe is... underwater, although I think actually they don't quite get to that point in this book, but we come to understand how it came about. Have you read it, Jane?
No, I've got it in my hands now. It's one of the two comics I didn't read this week. I didn't have time.
The cover's really striking, though. It's what actually, because I wasn't going to pick this up, because after the first one I couldn't stop laughing all the way through.
Yeah.
So I thought, it's only three parts, so I'll get the next one.
And that's how they get you in. She is quite a badass on the cover of this, isn't she?
Yeah, definitely.
The story's okay. It's not the most mind-blowing of the Flashpoint books, but I, as I've said on the pod before, I'm really digging Flashpoint as a story. I think it's a well-realised alternate universe. The only thing that particularly took me out of the story, and I guess something that maybe in Wonder Woman mythos I have a slight issue with because I think it's silly, is when you see a squadron of invisible planes descending on London. That's kind of silly.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's cool enough. You know, it's a fast and frenetic little tale. And as I say, it's adding flesh to the bones of a story I'm really enjoying. The other Flashpoint book. I'm actually holding the book up to my computer screen so you can see them.
Oh, yay!
So Christine, you're looking at it.
Visual contact?
Sorry?
You guys have visual contact? You're on video?
No.
No, I'm just an idiot.
Oh, okay. I'm like, I'm missing out. I don't want to see you guys. Okay.
Chris, you've met me. You know what an idiot I am. You've had I would have thought you could work out I'm just holding up a screen where no one can see it. I'm doing it out of habit, which is a bit odd.
I believe.
I'm glad someone does. Although, in my mind, because I can see a picture of you on Skype, it's like you're looking at the picture, but Jane's just got the generic Skype person with a ponytail. I feel like she's not really paying proper attention.
I've got a ponytail on your Skype.
We have, which is really off. Yeah, I've never seen her with a ponytail, I don't think. The other book is a Flashpoint book is Dead Man and the Flying Graysons, which is part two. Oh, I should say actually Wonder Woman the Furies is by Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning. Dead Man and the Flying Graysons by J.T. Krull and Fabrizio Frentino, which I've probably pronounced horribly. I think I said last time, I really enjoyed this lovely art in this book in particular. But I enjoyed the first issue really was setting up the carefree life, essentially, that the Graysons were living in the Flashpoint universe. Dick's parents haven't died. They're still part of a travelling circus that's travelling at this point around parts of Europe that aren't submerged underwater. Events take a turn for the worse in this book as the Amazonians are trying to get hold of the Helm of Naboo, which one of the circus folk has about them. Tragedy strikes pretty early on in this story. It's definitely much darker than the last one. But it's just as well written, just as enjoyable. Dead Man's character is very much expanded as well and becomes a lot more like the comic book version of that character that we know, rather than this guy who's never actually developed his powers. And I think one thing that's a strand across the Flashpoint books is, although these guys, their stories haven't developed in the way you'd expect them to in normal DC continuity, they all slowly start to... Their destinies take over, and they seem to become the characters that we know from the ultimate universe. The reason I paused then is I was flicking through as I'm talking about it, and I forgot that there is. I was talking last week about gratuitous violence. There's a half man half shark character in the circus. There's a really gruesome takedown of an Amazonian as he grabs hold of her and essentially starts eating her.
Wow.
Which makes for quite a spectacular one-page splash.
And they say comics aren't for kids anymore. I don't...
well, this is teen-rated, so it's all right for teenagers, maybe. I was going to say maybe not for Scarlet, but when she gets hold of my comics, all she wants to do is rip them. As I say, it's a beautifully drawn book. Story's pretty tight. One of the better Flashpoint books. And it expands upon the story in the central title. towards the end of the book, Dick and Dead Man end up making contact with the European resistance. And as I say, looks like, despite the fact their stories haven't followed the origins that we see in normal DC continuity, Destiny is taking over regardless. The final one for me that I'll touch on very, very quickly, because I think Max might be talking about this later on, is the first of a four-part series, Butcher Baker Candlestick Maker, which is Butcher from the Boys' origin story. There's two things that are brilliant about this. The first one is it's a boys' story, and I quite like the boys. And the second good bit is Derek Robinson is back on pencils. That might be the main reason that this book took me twice as long to read that it otherwise might have. I love his art so much. The detail and the character that he brings to his illustrations is unbelievable. There's a splash page about 7 or 8 pages in where we're first introduced to the young Marine Butcher during the Falklands conflict. There's about 4 or 5 figures in the shot with one squaddy that's turned around looking directly in your eye. It's just, Captain, you can't stop looking at it. The character and the detail in the guys and the page, the composition is just beautiful. I couldn't tear myself away from it, to be honest. The story itself is told in present day and flashback. In present day, Butcher's gone back home to the East End of London, where he's attending basically his father's funeral. And in the present day sequences, it's basically a monologue between him and his dead father. Although that would be dialogue rather than monologue. But can it be dialogue even with a dead person? I think it must be. It must be monologue.
What's the dead person speaking?
No, not very much.
Okay, not during it's dead... a comic. You never know.
Am I overthinking?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Obviously, the monologue between him and his father leads to flashback sequences where we see Butcher's rather tough upbringing with his very loving mother but very violent father. And again, I overuse this phrase now. I was going to say flesh and the bones. It's embellishing in the character that we know from the boys. We've kind of had that with Frenchie. We've kind of had that with Wee Huey. Most of the mother's milk, of course, and the female have all had backstories told, and this is the one that we were waiting for. I suspect it'll be intriguing. It feels of the... this is the third mini-series that spawned out the boys. The first was Herogasm, which was a little bit in your face and a little bit... I don't know. It's split opinion, I think, is the best thing I can say. Highland Laddie, which was Wee Huey's story, was lovely. This one feels like it's got a little bit of depth to it. It's a really emotional read. And who knows where it's going to go, to be honest with you. I don't really want to second-guess Garth Ennis. But Butcher Baker Candlestick Maker, if you're reading The Boys, I can't recommend that highly enough.
Do you like The Boys, James?
I love Yay. The Boys, James.
Timothy Swan, Timothy Swan. He'll break your arm, break your arm, with his bloody great wings.
Tonight, on a very special
Mumcast, we'll have the first ever improvised recording from Timothy Swan. That's right, it's me, calling in to talk to you about FTL Year One from Orangutan Comics, which I'm sure you will have all heard about and or read, a series that is now edited by our good friend David Wynne and was originally overseen by equal friend Ian Sharman. The point I'd like to make about it is that I finally read it. I bought it a while back digitally at some very low, low prices, which encouraged me, along with the fact that I knew some of the artists slash writers, to have a look at it. And it's an anthology comic, which is a terrific mix of different styles and stories. It starts very strongly in the first issue with a robotic rebellion story in black and white, with some great action scenes. The first issue, so the first quarter of the collection, is mostly concerned with vampires, and it has some very nice takes on vampirism, both artistically and story-wise. There are a lot of short stories. I'm a big fan of short stories. I've written a lot of them over the last few years, and I like how it can almost be similarly structured to a joke. You have a setup and a reveal, and the writers here have been very astute and talented at creating scenarios in just a short space of time, and obviously the artists have done a lot of work in order to bring some evocative worlds in and therefore build that up for the final twist. So yeah, that's very enjoyable. So yes, I'm going to pick up a couple of stories from each of the issues. So this opening story that really grabbed me was titled Scapegoat by Dwight McPherson, Riccardo Latina, Valentina Bianconi, and Ian Sharman. And talks about human versus machine versus human war, and perhaps the final act in that war, the assassination of the head general. It has some great robots, some great battle suits, and a certain nihilistic post-apocalyptic outlook that I quite enjoyed. In the second issue, again, the opener of that is, if you imagine, I guess, the philosophy of Watchmen condensed into 7 pages there. Morgan McPhee and the End of Tomorrow. Again, Ian Sharman, art by Melissa Hudson, has a sort of teen spy action hero discovering that she might actually have to do darker things than she intended in order to save the world from its fate, ends with a very kind of brutal and emotional scene. That issue also introduces The Secret Cross, which is a Germans during World War One versus werewolves series, which in issue 3 has a stunning revelation where it reveals one of the units of these elite werewolf hunters is a young Adolf Hitler. I think that's a really brave move to bring in someone on what is essentially the side of a heroes, someone who obviously ends up being, you know, perhaps the ultimate human villain. Issue 4, there's a terrific, artistically, obviously it's been well written, although working from history, story of Boudicca, Boadicea, whichever you prefer, depending on whether you're, you know, Celtic or Roman, and has some great art, some great layout, a lot of intricate Celtic style designs that really evokes the character and the time, suggests the great clash for our nation that went a very particular way, perhaps not the way you would expect from the setup. So I think what we have here is a great British anthology comic, which obviously we're biased saying that, but I think it is genuinely true, that has the opportunity to tell some stories of a great variety, and I think that's the raison d'etre, the mission of the comic, but I think it does a really good job in doing that, bringing out exciting, dark, fascinating stories in a very short space, and hopefully we'll be seeing issue 6 sometime in the near future.
Over to you.
Yes, me. I picked up one of the retroactive comics this week, which you were quite excited about, James. It was the Wonder Woman one, and it's Classic Tales from the 70s. There's two stories in this. It's by Dennis O'Neill and Jay Bone. I don't know if either of you know why they're bringing out the retroactive comics. Is this just a gimmick? Is it tying into anything, or...?
I think they think people will buy them.
And that's true, because they're quite a high price point. They're one-shots, but $4.99.
Nostalgia sells, yeah. Jane.
Nostalgia, I didn't even know I had for Wonder Woman. It's two stories. They are quite classic, typical 70s comic book style stories about Wonder Woman. And the first one is she's randomly parachuting into the ocean, but is actually to go to her home island, and it's sinking into the water, and she's sort of stuck in the ocean with a parachute and nowhere to go apart from down. So she has a look and sees this foreign spaceship thing in the water and goes in there, and then the story unfolds that this weird spaceship is 5 billion years old and is sort of capturing the island that she lives on under the water, and it puts her through these tests to stop the island from being destroyed. It was a very silly story. It was very cheesy, maybe a bit sexist.
So it's in keeping with 70s books, then.
It was very beautifully drawn. It's very, very pretty. The style is classic. I quite liked her costume. I'm not a fan of the old Wonder Woman costume because it's the most impractical thing ever. But in terms of this comic, you can see why she's got that costume. It's just silly, it's fun, and it fits in with her girly persona.
Hello.
She's a bit of a... Hi. You there?
Hello.
Can't hear you, Jane.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Oh, that was weird.
Oh.
I didn't move. I stayed exactly the same place.
No, that's fine. You keep on going and I'll work
Christine's
out.
Christine's gone.
There's a problem with the call, and we should hold on while they try and get the call back. If you want to persevere for the time being, we'll see if we can get Christine back.
Okay. Sorry, I have to say this. It says participated for in any amount of time she was here for. So. it's very sort of girl power and...
I think Christine's back.
Oh,
hello! That was exciting.
That's scary.
I thought you carried on like a trooper, though, Jane. I was quite impressed.
Oh, yeah. I did a nick.
Ooh.
It's got a really weird 70s girl power type thing where it's not really an empowered woman. It's just a woman who's a bit tough, but she's still she's still pretty and looks after her hair and how she looks and stuff. And it's just, it's ridiculous, but kind of tolerable ridiculousness, because you know it's of the time, not to be taken that seriously. There are two stories in this, and the second one is where she has to find her friend. She has to steal a ruby to help one of her friends. And this story, she encounters Batwoman. No, not Batwoman. Catwoman. Is it Catwoman? I think it's Catwoman. It didn't look anything like Catwoman. I got really confused at first. I was like, her costume is completely different. Her costume is actually she's more covered up in the 70s than she is now.
That sounds about right.
Which I thought was really bizarre. Again, it's a silly story of going on an adventure and about how she's a tough cookie and quite a bit of racism in this one.
Oh, okay.
They encounter, not on a Tintin kind of racist.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
So it's not as bad, but yeah, again, you've got to remember it was, you know, set in the 70s, so it was probably a bit more tolerated then.
Well, hooray for the 70s. Yeah,
let's leave them in the past. They were fun, silly stories. It's quite interesting, especially as I've picked up the Flashpoint one. I don't know why I've been sucked into that. I'm picking up a Flashpoint, obviously Wonder Woman as it currently is, and I'll be picking up when it reboots in September. So it's quite nice to read just the story and just see how Wonder Woman used to be. Very different person.
I'm hoping it's going to be awesome in September. Brian Azzarello writing. It's very exciting indeed.
Yes, you and Nick are really excited for me. I'm a bit scared.
I will be amazed if he lets you down. I really love his writing, so I've got very, very high hopes.
Cool. Other than that, I picked up the Daredevil and the DC Comics preview for September. So
I have that in my hand right now.
So it's got everything in there of what's to come. There's only really one thing I think I'm going to be interested in, that will be Wonder Woman, but I know you've got quite a list, James.
Jeez Louise, is that really what you're picking up?
For now, I'm a bit scared to look at any other page apart from Wonder Woman.
Oh, right, I can't. I was flicking through it and regretting I haven't picked up more than I have.
This must be sorry to interrupt you. This must be how, you know, Clothing Catalogue is for people, or an Argos catalogue or something. This must be a catalogue of all the things you want.
It's the little book of dreams. Are you going to be picking up any of the books from the relaunch 52, Chris?
I don't know. I might. I think I'm the kind of person that this relaunch, or I don't know what they're calling it, but who it might be aimed at, because I don't read any DC titles regularly at all. And I think since the multiverse confuses me, I think it would be a good idea to, for someone to like give me just like a new number one of everything and like, this is it, start reading here. But I haven't really, so I might, absolutely. I haven't really looked into it though, which I guess it's about time I started doing, because there's like a, you need to, I need to tell my my comic shop 2 months in advance. Usually that's when they make their orders. If I want something on my pull list, they don't have a lot of extra issues of anything really. So it's definitely just indoor or in-store subscriptions. So I need to look into that, but I absolutely might. So I don't know if you have any recommendations for me, I'll be.
I recommend Action Comics to anyone because it's Grant Morris writing. So Grant Morris or Grant Morrison. I know him as Grant Morris. We're very close. But it's Grant Morrison writing. And then the two, apart from the Batman books, which I'm obviously, I can't really be objective about because of how I feel about Batman. But I think the other two that I'm really excited for are Scott Snyder's Swamp Thing. And Jeff Lemire's Animal Man.
Oh, I forgot about them.
Yeah, both. And Jeff Lemire's also writing Frankenstein Agent of Shade as well, which looks very cool. Which is, that's part of the Dark range of books that are coming out from DC, which are the sort of the more, the horror titles, presumably slightly more adult as well. All-Star Western as well looks very cool.
Oh, you made me look Justin past Wonder Woman. Oh.
Yeah, Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, and Moritat, who has been awesome on The Spirit.
That's a pretty good team.
I heard Wonder Woman will be losing her pants.
Sorry, Chris?
Is that true?
Sorry, Chris, you broke up a little bit.
She got a new costume recently, and I noticed she probably won't be wearing that anymore. We'll go back to the bottoms.
Is that about Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks like she's still got trousers.
Yeah, but she's lost the jacket. She lost the jacket a while ago.
Oh no, I was thinking, okay, maybe it was just because she was on the cover of some comic, but that may not have been representative of what's in the comic, I guess. No, it was just I read somewhere that someone had pointed out that she lost her pants.
She has.
Hope she gets to keep them.
See, now you mention it, I've gone to the Wonder Woman page on here. She's definitely in underpants again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear.
Yes.
That really isn't. Her legs must get terribly cold.
I'm
going to
draw trousers on her.
Yeah.
Felt trousers.
Not only cold, I just feel bad for all these like female heroes who are not wearing any pants because supposedly they protect your skin, you know, from scrapes and such. I mean, because you're in battle all the time and maybe you walk up against a shrubbery.
That's true. Shrubs do appear in Wonder Woman.
I even lost that word for a second, and then I got another Monty Python flashback.
Oh, no.
Bring me a shrubbery.
Exactly.
Because I want to attack Wonder Woman with it, because I've noticed she hasn't got any trousers on.
Exactly.
That's exactly where that went. I don't know, we'll see what we see. But no, now I look at it again. It's weird, in JLA... she appears to have the trousers on, but in her own title, she appears to have ditched the trousers altogether.
Interesting.
She's inconsistent.
Maybe she's wearing flesh-coloured leggings.
Or tights.
No, leggings. They're the new tights.
I obviously have nothing to offer there. I wouldn't know either, having never worn leggings or tights. not that I'm prepared to admit on the podcast. I really wouldn't know.
Really?
Not even as underwear when it's cold?
I wear underwear every day.
No, but I mean, long underwear.
Oh, no, I had a job where I had to wear long underwear, but they were good manly long johns.
Okay.
And they just had the right amount of very unsexy bagginess to them. to make them a truly chappish thing to wear rather than... I was very careful about that.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I once had a job where that was essential. I really wouldn't have made it through the day. Anyway, that's not, That's neither here nor there. Let's not talk about my undergarments.
No, let's not.
Let's talk about Wonder Woman's underwear.
Yes.
Is that what you bought this week, Jane? Are we done talking about our spinning
yes.
orders? Good. That's very Wonder Woman heavy week for you.
It was.
There were quite a few of those retro books out. I did have a look at them. I couldn't really afford them this week, but some of them look quite cool. It's got most of the big names, I think, of the DC universe are covered in them, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, I did see. I spotted a couple of them. I think, didn't you pick up one before, or Nick picked up one?
No, a few months ago I picked up a mini anthology of old Batman stories.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
But that was just reprintings
yeah.
of old stories, whereas I think these retroactive ones, isn't it a new story written in the style
mm-hmm.
of in the beginning,
it's
and then it's a retro,
yeah, from the 70s,
yeah, retro
yeah.
reprint back. Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
Okay, so Butcher Baker, not the Righteous Maker, the other one, Candlestick Maker, or rather, that's the title. It's a miniseries spin-off of Ennison Robertson's The Boys, with Robertson actually on board. That's right, Dak Robertson returning to The Boys, etc. And like any good Ennis comic, it opens with a bit of warfare, as we get a glimpse of a younger Butcher shooting a plane in the Marines, which is nice. The crux of the issue is Billy Butcher talking to his dear old dead Dar about his past. His dad's past initially, but also his own, by connection. The sort of nice framing device to really get you involved with a character. And Christ, turns out his dad was a complete cunt. Sorry, I meant arsehole. What you get out of the issue, of which the explanation of who his dad is and how it affected who he was and where he went is the majority of the issue, is this great peek into a character that has previously been played pretty secretive. It doesn't change who he is or even explain everything, but it's a new layer that makes Butcher that touch more real, you know? And it's tight. Oh, it's tight. That's what he said? Anyway. This is some of Ennis' most solid writing, and it takes something that could easily be mundane or cliché and made it amazing. But that's a given, as is the evident talent of Derek Robertson, who's a joy to see drawing something related to The Boys again. It kind of makes me hope that he returns to the main series for the upcoming finale. I really don't have much else to say. Beautiful, brilliant, bloody, ballsy and a bit bleak, Butcher Baker Candlestick Maker issue 1 is a must-read for fans of The Boys and newcomers alike. Boom, there's a blurb thing. What do you call those? What do you call a blurb thing? It's like a mini review on the back of books. Get back to me on that one. And that's it. I don't know why I can't think of more to say. Admittedly, I'm a bit distracted. They just announced Lego Marvel and DC figures, which means I can finally own a Lego Wonder Woman and make her ride in an X-Wing and pretend it's an invisible jet. Not that I'm a huge child or anything. Next week, I might talk about My Little Pony. No. Okay, maybe.
Shall we do the news ambush?
Yep.
Good. Thank you very much for everyone who gave me some news. First in was talk about MCM Manchester, which happens the weekend of the 30th of July. So not this weekend coming, the weekend after, which I'd like to go to for two. I'm not going to. I'd like to go to for two reasons. First, I really like Manchester. It's a very cool city. And the second one is it's absolutely packed with Momcast favourites this time around. Amongst our indie favourites, George Beedham of Jambo, Matt the Drawther of Moo and Keo, and Daniel Clifford of Sugar Glider are all going to be there, amongst others. But also, and you'll be very excited about this, Jane, I'm very gutted you're not going... Lee Gallagher's going to be there as a special guest.
No. I did get to see him at the London MCM.
Which I
and I got a hug from him.
Did you meet Lee with us when we were up at Thought Bubble, Chris?
I don't know.
He gave us donuts.
No, I don't remember donuts.
And he had a lovely hat.
He did.
Yes. No, don't remember that.
You might be interested in another one of the special guests then, Chris. Anthony Johnson is going to be there.
Cool.
Along with the very nice John McRae, who I met at BIX a couple of years ago now. really generous guy with his time. I'm happy to talk to you. And Mark Ellaby, the drawer of the Becky Cloonan. Becky
no.
Cloonan? Lucky Noonan.
Chloe Noonan.
Chloe Noonan. God, dear.
I screwed up last time, so.
Good. That's all right. I must be thinking, I was looking at her tweeting about being at San Diego earlier. I got her on the mind. He's not the drawer of Becky Cloonan. Definitely. She is a human being that exists.
We've met her in flesh, so we know.
Yeah, we have. And you've still got the restraining order. You need to be careful.
Oops, sorry.
Bless you.
That's fine. Did you hear that Anthony Johnson is writing like the Daredevil graphic novel, original graphic novel that Marvel is giving out next year?
I did not know about that, and I'd like
to know. So extremely excited. I actually may have given him a cyber hug on Twitter the other day, which was very unlike me. Not that I'm not the kind of person who likes to hand out hugs randomly, but it's they just announced it, I think, it was the day before yesterday, Tuesday, because I remember being very excited, counting down to Daredevil, and then that was announced that Marvel will be giving out it's a series of various original graphic novels featuring I think Fantastic Four, Daredevil, Spider-Man, a couple of others, which is apparently they go back to sort of reimagining of their origins, but through like a modern lens kind of thing. And it's an original graphic novel. And I try to get Anthony Johnson to say something about it, but, I was very sneaky about it. I'm like, can you tell me how many pages are going to be? And he said, I can't say anything, but it's a good length. That's all I got out of him. It's a good length. So, let's hope for lots and lots of pages. But anyway, he's apparently working on it right now, and it's I am super excited about it because I know there were a lot of people when he was on Daredevil with Andy Diggle that people wanted to see him take over the book and everything because he did really a great job with his part of it. So I'm very, very excited about that. It's due out next April.
Cool.
Sounds very exciting.
So if you see him at MCM Manchester and you go, make sure you grill him about his Daredevil his Daredevil book, and then immediately tweet Christine to tell her what you've found out. So that's MCM Manchester, which does sound excellent, actually. Next, I have to mention this because I listened to it during the week and I really enjoyed it, was Ryan K. Lindsay's new podcast, which is a part, The Process. Now, because I'm really unprepared, I haven't written down the names of the other two contributors. I know one of the chaps is the author of Green Wake, and the name of both the other ones completely escaped me. So sorry about that, Ryan. But The Process is essentially a discussion podcast about writing and the process of writing comic books, and it's good quality, intelligent conversation about comic books, the likes of which you rarely, if ever, get to hear on the Momcast. So I enjoyed it a great deal. It's part of an image stable of podcasts. You can find it on iTunes. And in the show notes later, I will endeavour to leave details of how you can find The Process. But I listened to it this week, genuinely enjoyed it. He's an eloquent and erudite fellow, is Ryan.
He is.
And he's got a lovely Australian accent. And, of course, a fellow Weekly Crisis alumni. Is that correct? Would that be right with you, Christine?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I did write for the Weekly Crisis, and then I don't anymore. So mostly because I just didn't have the time anymore. So I only did that for a few months, and I just never like officially resigned. It just at this point, it's apparent that I don't blog there anymore. It's been months and months, but sadly I won't be able to pick it up again either, because it's just too much stuff.
Are we getting the exclusive resignation on the Momcast?
Yes,
it's a Momcast exclusive. I'm very happy. I'm not very happy you're not writing on there, I mean. I like the Weekly Crisis. I'm just happy we've got an exclusive. Two more pieces of news. One is Warwick JC of Much Momcast Love is to launch his own cable cookery show very shortly. It's going to be based on food cooked in washing machines. Starting with a range of exciting fish dishes, which I'm really pleased for him. I'll wish him all the best.
Great.
That may or may not be real. I had a very odd conversation with Warwick today on Twitter. He put a load of washing on this morning, finished a load of washing, and found that he'd washed a mackerel fish.
But let me tell you, there's actually a book that's real, a cookbook that was written by a Swedish college student a couple of years ago. That was kind of funny that she said she was living in her dorm room, you know, and she had access to a kitchen, but she was, you know, gone too much and would go out there and cook. So she actually had a, you know, a standard coffee maker, you know, just a little pot and then the filter on top and everything. And she started cooking things in her coffee maker, like soups and, you know, pasta, noodles, everything. So she actually wrote a cookbook about things you can cook in your coffee maker. Absolutely true.
That makes good sense. There you go, Warwick. So it wasn't... Warwick, if you're listening, that wasn't such a stupid suggestion. I recommend pitching that to like UK Food Channel. That's a real thing, isn't it? I think I've seen my wife watching it. You should totally pitch that, Warwick.
Economical as well, because you can cook your food and do your washing at the same time.
No. Yeah, but you wouldn't want to do that. Because you'd get, you know, it would... No. I don't think I can recommend that. It's not... Sounds a bit too toxic.
I think you failed to think that through adequately, Jane.
Hard times. We can't be thinking.
In these times of economic hardship for us all.
I think the only way to cooking in your washing machine or dishwasher is to not put any dishwasher powder or anything in there. To just use steam, I think, is what I would recommend. As someone who's cooked cherries today.
What about instead of washing powder, you put a stock cube?
That's a good idea.
Oh!
Now we're cooking.
It does sound like a really really awkward way of cooking food, though.
Yeah, that's true. See, I guess we hadn't thought this through thoroughly.
That's why
Jane.
I thought
Thank you for...
doing your washing at the same time would be good, save money.
Well, either you're going to eat food that tastes like detergent, or you're going to smell like stock.
Here's an idea. You know how there's all this new technology out there for cooking? Like you can cook rice in a bag.
You could maybe start
selling, you know, fish that's in a plastic bag where you can like it will like let through the steam, but none of the icky stuff.
That's a good idea.
I'm giving that business idea away for free.
There you go.
Well, I'm afraid, Christine, I'm out at this point. Now, again, that's another reference you're probably not going to get, so I'm sorry. I don't know if you get Dragon's Den over there. I very much doubt it.
Get what?
There's a program called Dragon's Den where a panel of...
On one of the smaller channels, so an odd hour. But, I've heard of it.
All right, it's very odd. Carrying on with the news, that wasn't real news. Real news, though, By the time you hear this podcast, there should be new Particle Fiction by drawer extraordinaire David Wynne, friend of the show. That's naff.
That is awful.
I'm actually a little bit ashamed of myself. I actually need you people in the room to punch me in the leg when I look like I'm going to say things like that. I'm turning into a cheesy local radio DJ. Stressful. But yeah, there'll be new Particle Fiction up there, which is particlefiction.posterous.com, I believe. If you want to go there. And one final bit of news that we were emailed is about a conference that's being held at the Imperial War Museum in London on the 19th and 20th of August this year called Comics and Conflicts, which... I must admit, I thought immediately of Kiha when I read this. Amongst the people that will be appearing will be author of Charlie's War, Pat Mills, and war comic writer extraordinaire Garth Ennis. comic writer extraordinaire, full stop, amongst others. I believe also the guys behind the comic strip Doomsbury are going to be there as well. If you're into comics and you enjoy comics about conflict and so forth, it sounds fascinating. I know John and I were having a look at the schedule for the 2 days, and it really looks fascinating, actually. Garth Ennis, I think, appears on the Saturday, and if it's Pat Mills, which actually I think of the two, I'd quite like to hear Pat Mills talking about particularly Charlie's War, which is obviously a seminal book about conflict, of course. So that's really fascinating. So if you, I think, probably go to maybe the Imperial War Museum website, or certainly if you do a Google search for comics and conflicts, you should find details about that. It sounds fascinating. I'm just trying to find... It's got pricing into... all right. So on Saturday, you can get in for £6. And there's various prices for various parts of the talks on the 2 days. It's good that I prepare these pieces before we do the pod. So I've got all of the salient facts to hand. Hold on. On the Friday, a ticket for the entire day is £30, I beg your pardon. Concessions are £15. And then I think it's cheaper on the Saturday by the looks of this. But it looks fascinating. If you're close to London, I recommend checking that out. That's the news.
Dum, da, dum, so, dum, dum.
Now on to the main event.
Yes.
Chris. Daredevil,
yes,
one.
The main event. Yes, it's been finally, it's in print. You know, we've been waiting for. I guess this was announced back in March 20th, I think, the new creative team. And so yeah, that was exactly 4 months. So I've been waiting a long time, and there have been so many interviews and teasers and preview art, and everyone's been super excited about it. One thing that surprised me has been I've gone to message boards and things like that, is how uncharacteristically positive people have been, leading up to this book coming out yesterday. And people are even more excited now. So it's great. I mean, as a Daredevil fan, I love that there are apparently lots of people picking this book up. People who haven't done so in a long time, people are doing it for the first time. And I really, really like this issue. And but I would actually first like to hear from Jane, whom you picked up your first Daredevil issue, didn't you?
Yeah, my first ever Daredevil book. It was I was seeing the sort of teasers on Twitter and things, and I got more and more interested. Obviously, you were getting more and more excited about it, Chris. I just thought, well, it's number one, so there's no reason for me not to pick it up. And I'm glad I did. It was just the story, obviously being quite new to the character, I didn't know a lot of the background, and I think the way it sets up Daredevil for you, you get all the information you need to know about him that's relevant without going on too much or you guessing and lots of things. And obviously there were things that are happening, I imagine, happening at the end of the last run, and that's addressed in this one, but it's not so much of, it looks like it's going to be main plot point, but it's not so heavily, if you weren't reading it before, you didn't know what was going on sort of thing. So, it was really, really good. The opening part of the book was brilliant, just really brilliant. I really enjoyed it. And I really, really liked the perception awareness drawn on a page of, so you can see what he can see. That was just so it's staggering. It was really beautifully done. It's really popped off the page.
that's one of the things they've been talking a lot about going into this. And one thing that I was very happy about, because there's a tendency, like, writers really differ in this regard. There are like some writers who are, as Mark Waid seems to be, and also the two artists, Marcus Martin and Paulo Rivera, really into utilizing his unique perspective. And really enjoying writing that and really enjoying putting themselves inside his head, so to speak, and trying to figure out how it all works. So you have some writers who have been like that, more or less. And then you have sort of the writers who don't seem to enjoy that as much and who just sort of like He's blind, but he's got all these other senses, and it sort of, it evens out somehow. And then they just kind of write him as a sighted, non-powered hero, sort of. I mean, it's kind of like it, and it's kind of a shame, because it's really, I mean, you know, if you have a character who's unique in some way, you need to play that up, you know, you need to kind of advertise to your audience why it's different from everybody else out there. And of course, I mean, he's got a very unique personality, of course, also, but I think it's really, really cool how they've done that. And that was some of the things that I was really looking forward to. And as you said, Jane, I think the opening part is wonderful, and how it ends with that page from the Bugle, which is really, I can say, as a long-time Daredevil reader, quite different. You see that a lot in Spider-Man, how they incorporate pages from the Bugle and things like that, but they don't really do that in Daredevil, and it's sort of, already it kind of sets the tone that this is going to be something different from what we've seen before.
Yeah.
I don't want to be cynical. We've spoken before about how I struggled previously with the decompressed nature of particularly Daredevil in Bendis and Brubaker's era. I think more happens between the first page and the Daily Bugle page than I think happened in about 24 months when I first started reading Daredevil. There's a real sense of giddy excitement, isn't there? It really sets off an amazing pace, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I think it's kind of funny how you're talking about, you know, decompression, especially for me anyway, especially Bendis. I mean, Brubaker had more going on usually than Bendis. For me, I read all of Bendis' stuff after the fact in hardcovers. So that worked fine for that, because you had the entire story and you could just sit down for a couple of hours and read through the whole thing. But if I had been forced to wait for 1 month between each of those issues, I would have been, that would have been too much. I mean, it's like you're super hungry and someone's feeding you little crumbs to eat, and it's like they're delicious, but it's like you want more. So much happens. That's another thing I mentioned in my review on my site too, is that I think what they really managed to squeeze a lot of story into, well, you know, first talking about this first half of the first 20 page main story, because you get to see Daredevil in action, you get to see Matt Murdock, the lawyer, in action, and you also get to sort of spend some time alone with, like, Matt Murdock, Private Citizen, too. So you get all three aspects, and you get a lot of things happening on each of these three fronts. So I think that's really nicely done, and also how Wade just kind of cuts from one to the other, and it's perfectly smooth, and it all, you know, goes together, and it's fun, and it's very much, it's very different to see Matt being this jovial compared to what he's been like for the last few years. Mm. But at the same time, it is very true to the character. And I think that's really important. And I love that. I really get the feeling that Mark Waid gets what makes Matt tick. He gets how he works, you know, and how he thinks and how he relates to things. And two big thumbs up.
Yeah, after the doom and depression of Shadowland, it's quite nice to see him smile again in this.
Smiling more in this one issue than he has for, actually, I mean, it used to be an event when he smiled. I actually have, no, seriously, I devoted an entire blog post to one smile one time, which came in, let's see, when was this? This was during Brubaker's run, Daredevil number 110. Anyway, the issue before Lady Bullseye shows up. When he goes to, I don't have to get into it, but it's like there on one, you know, one in one panel, there it is. You see him smiling. So I had to scan that and post it and, like, look, there's a smile. That's how bad it was. And so I love the Brubaker run. I mean, nothing, you know, nothing is Brubaker, but I mean, that says something about how it's like, it's a special occasion when he smiles. It's like, it's Christmas. It only happens once a year. So.
Do you feel, I found page one, I found striking. And kind of very evocative of Frank Miller, actually. Is what it reminded me of, mostly because of the Dark Knight Returns. It's set in a similar way, but the feeling I got from reading the book is very much it's a turn away from the dark and gloomy Daredevil, and maybe looking back towards the character, maybe from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I definitely don't know Daredevil anywhere as nearly, but that's the feeling I got. I don't know if you felt.
Are you talking about the first page of the story when he
the very first page of the book where we're basically setting up
that one Matt's page thing by that was written by Fred Van Lente actually.
That's it, yeah.
And Marcus Miller. I remember that was actually kind of interesting. I was surprised to see it included in the book because I think that was released many months ago as a teaser for something else. But it's a very good summary of the character. I agree with you.
It kind of feels like it's setting out the stall
of the
whole book, really. It works really well as a first page.
It does, absolutely. It really, what was I going to say? There's so much I could say about this book.
How do you feel about how they cope with Matt? How Matt perceives the world, his radar vision, if you like.
Yeah,
how did that?
I really like that, and that's another thing that I have an entire series on the blog devoted to. I actually have a series called A History of the Radar Sons, which I feel like I need to update now, so I can, because I'm still stuck in like the late 80s. It's a very detailed series. I need to update that. The way that Paulo Rivera draws it, I think, is very cool because I like that they're emphasizing that it's black on black, even though you've got those like pinkish purple lines going through. That's sort of like a topographic map. But it's kind of funny. You know, just to tell you an anecdote, I remember reading online a few years ago, there was a guy who was really, really upset with the Daredevil movie based on the fact that they had used blue, the color blue, to represent the radar sense when it had been clearly shown in the comic that it was red. Daredevil sees in red. And I'm like, no, do you not understand the concept of like an artist's rendering? You know, this is not a literal, you know, interpretation. You can't, I mean, if you were to draw it like literally, you would need it to be all black and you would need it to be, you know, textured or something. I mean, you can't do it. Mm. So of course it's going to, you're going to need some imagination to really get close to the real experience. But as a representation, I think it works really well. And it works to kind of show that, yes, it is all black, but it's black with shapes in it, sort of.
I like how it develops as well as the first story goes on. And we see what happens when Matt's senses are... I just thought it's an incredibly clever device. I really liked it.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I was kind of wondering about that. I'm like, First of all, I had to look up the word chaff. I've never heard that before in my life. I mean, English is not my first language. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just not into like military stuff. But I had to look that up, and I'm like, oh, okay. So it's a mechanical radar scrambler, and I'm thinking, okay, so are we back to the literal interpretation of the radar sense again? And then he sort of taps the ball, which sort of suggests like something more sound-based. So I'm, as someone who's got a very geeky interest in the quote-unquote Daredevil science, that's going to be interesting to follow up on and see what happens from there.
You never fail to impress me in terms of your analysis of his. I hadn't even though he's now looking at it, it's quite obvious he's tapping the wall.
Yeah.
I hadn't picked up on it. I was focusing on something else in that image, to be honest with you.
The shield. Really the shield.
Or whatever it is, yes. Yes, yeah, absolutely, that's what I was focusing on. I hadn't noticed at all that he was tapping on the wall to try and overcome the chaff.
Yeah, seriously, I should probably devote an entire post to that. I think I will. Actually, another thing I wanted to say, I did have a list of things to talk about this issue, but anyway, I guess I got distracted, you know, making cherry pie, and then I had a glass of wine, and, you know, one thing follows another. One thing I wanted to say was I've seen so many people online, like, talk about in reviews and other things, oh, you know, this is reminiscent of Stan Lee's Daredevil, or, oh, now we're going back to Stan Lee, and I'm thinking, first of all, I think it's kind of sad that we always need to describe something by what it might or might not be similar to. It's as if, you know, everything needs to be reminding the reader of something that's gone before, which I think is kind of silly. And the second thing is, seriously, how can anyone compare this to Stan Lee's Daredevil? With all due respect to Stan Lee, I mean, the guy was a genius, but he also wrote like 40 books a month. And most of Stan Lee's Daredevil wasn't really that good, you know? The first issue was gold. Sorry?
Do you think possibly what they're referring to, because I think I get it, do you think what they're referring to is less the style of the writing, but more about how the book feels? Because Stanley's books weren't always brilliantly written, you know, I think we can be honest and admit that. But they always had an exuberance about them. And I felt reading this book that it had an exuberance that I haven't. In fact, you don't really find in all that many modern comic book stories, let alone Daredevil. Do you think maybe that's why they passed it like that?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. But I think that's also giving, that's just focusing on one thing, though. And I think, yes, they're right in that it's got a feel to it where you see Daredevil being happy about being Daredevil and being able to do all of these things and sort of, you know, he's playing with a spot as if, you know, he were a cat playing with a mouse and he's enjoying it. And I think that is maybe the one thing that I think is very reminiscent of pre-Miller Daredevil, the old Matt who actually enjoyed being able to put on this costume and become this persona and do all the things he can do. Absolutely. But I think, yes, I mean, there are, you know, some elements that, you know, will remind you of that. But I think in general, though, to call this a throwback to that era, I would say maybe inspired in very small parts by or something. But that little fact aside, this doesn't read like a Stan Lee Daredevil book at all to me. No. I mean, the number one thing being, you know, the plot actually makes sense all the way through. I'm sorry, Stan Lee. It feels like I sound awful now. But I mean, seriously, the guy was a genius. But really, you know, especially with Daredevil. I mean, the first Daredevil number one is actually a very good origin story. And I would recommend to Jane, actually, if you haven't read it, it's available to read for free on Marvel.com on their digital comics things. You can read it, the whole thing for free. It's actually a rather enjoyable and very cute and it's a good origin story. It's got a little bit of everything. Then by Daredevil number two, number two from 1964, it already has plummeted to this, you know, catastrophically illogical tale of Electro putting Daredevil into Reed Richards' rocket and shooting him into space and having Daredevil magically land his spaceship in Central Park by somehow, I don't know how he even, you know, gets like what all the gauges are in the control room, you know. He lands there guided by the absence of heartbeats. I'm like, that's crap, right? Really. I mean, come on, Stanley. That's crap. You have no one else. You're brilliant, but that was a crappy comic. And there were a lot of really stupid, silly things like that for the first few years. No doubt about it.
I think you can say what you like about Stanley. I think he's... I think his reputation is relatively safe. I think we can be honest about the quality of some of his work. It's just we might never get jobs.
You're saying he doesn't listen to...
Oh, no, he's a big fan. Big fan of the Momcast. I sometimes find it amusing that he's rightly sainted for creating so many cool characters, but he did write some very crappy comic books at times, didn't he?
I think maybe his strength was more coming up with unique ideas than plotting.
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, I think like his creativity, that's where his strength was coming up with new concepts, new ideas. And he certainly did that with Daredevil. I'll say to this day, it was a very brave thing to do in 1964, to come up with a character that was blind. I mean, this is like almost 50 years ago. And this was back in a time when this was something that was still fairly shameful. I mean, you talk about, like, you know, you have the human rights movement, the women's rights movement and everything. And then there's the disability rights movement, which came later in the 70s. People weren't really aware of these kinds of issues at all. And more than likely, you know, if you introduce a blind hero, people are going to feel sorry for him. And it's going to be, which I think was one of the reasons Stan Lee overcompensated so much. I will often jokingly say that Stan Lee's Daredevil could color coordinate his wardrobe better than any sighted man. it was very important for Stan Lee to point out how Matt was better at everything than everybody else, kind of overcompensating a bit, but it's kind of funny.
Sorry, I was just busy on the internet arranging for some protection for myself after claiming that Stan Lee wrote some crappy comic books. I think I probably need some bodyguards or something now.
Anyway, I was really excited for this book. I've read it 5-6 times now, and it gets better. I mean, it stands up to being read, you know, a third, fourth, and fifth time too. Pretty fun.
How did you feel about the backup tale? That is, because there's essentially two stories. In the book, isn't there? The second one, written by Mark Waid again, but with art by Marcos Martin.
Yep.
Oh no, sorry, he's the co-storyteller.
Yes, I liked it. I liked the art in particular. I've been kind of nagging Marvel about the look of Matt's cane, the way Martin draws it, but I've been told by none other than Paolo Rivera that when Martin comes back on art duties in Mission number 4, the cane will look as different. So score one. I don't think that had anything to do with my nagging Stephen Wacker on Twitter and stuff. But other than that, I think that the art is I think he's a very good visual storyteller, and especially the way he will have the characters move and exist in several places on the page. I think I really like that. I really, really like that. I like that. That's one way of kind of having your big splash page, but still filling it with a lot of story elements and a lot of dialogue. And I like to have a comic book that takes more than 5 minutes to read. So for me, that was one thing I really liked here. They're using every bit of space that they have without it feeling cramped. But they're using it. So I really, really like Martin's art. Absolutely. Except from that one little detail. So I'm not going to make too much fuss about it. The one thing I reacted to, and this is, I would also like to have Jane's perspective here again, because as someone who's, you know, very more than familiar with Daredevil, it seems kind of, in some parts, the dialogue that Matt has with Foggy is very sort of literal. It's very, it feels like it's there more for the benefit of the reader than as a conversation that these two characters would have in real life. I'm thinking everything from how when Foggy asks about doesn't it make you crazy? Let's see if you can even read it from my comment here. I don't get how the sensory overload of Manhattan doesn't drive you crazy. And then Matt launches into this story about how he lost his sight and got his hypersenses and everything. And I'm thinking, they must have talked about this before. You know, like they've known each other since college. Of course, Foggy didn't know that Matt had, you know, special abilities back then. But, I mean, he's known about it since, you know, the mid-90s, real time. So it just feels, it feels a little bit too obvious. And there were a couple of places like that where it feels like it's, the story exists more to just give information to new readers, which I think is good in and of itself. But it does take you out of the story a little bit. It doesn't make it feel as genuine. I think if maybe they had polished some of that down a little bit, it would have been better. If they, you know, the way it is now, I think there are some places where it just doesn't feel 100% like a conversation that Matt and Foggy would have. But maybe that's just me.
No, I completely understand what you mean. It did seem quite deliberate, but it kind of also, when you got to the end and you realised why he was talking so much about this and where he ends up at the end of this sort of backup story, you kind of think, oh. So it's kind of a nice distraction, but in a deliberate way, and then it's giving you another piece of his life. But yeah, the splash page in particular, I love the the dialogue was quite deliberate, but for my benefit, I was quite thankful for that. I don't think it was too clumsy. I've seen it done so much worse. So it was the best I've seen out of this sort of dialogue. But the splash page, the movement of the characters, it does. The page moves. There's so much going on, the way they're moving across the road and where it's picking up bits that he's talking about. And it was just so nicely done. It was just little bits I kept sort of noticing. I'm like, oh, they're talking about, oh, okay, he's checking out her bum, and oh, look, he's can smell her hair. It's just, it was very nicely done. It was a nice
I agree. That big splash page when they move, they walk across, no, that's fantastic. And I like all the little things that Martin does too, with how Matt different things. I love it. I think it's really great, and I think getting those elements into the book will make it more unique. And I just think it's sad that so many writers and artists have decided to forgo, you know, doing something with what's so unique about Daredevil. But I mean, I'm really just sort of nitpicking, because I like the backup story too a great deal. I did, but there were just a couple of places where it felt like a bit too much. But yeah, when you get to the last page, of course, it's, maybe we shouldn't, you know, ruin the fun for everybody. But yeah, you do get the sense that there's more to this, and I think that's something that runs through the entire first issue, is that, yes, this is a very new tone for Daredevil. He's doing, I mean, he's smiling, he's being, you know, he's enjoying his, you know, the superheroic side of himself. He's having fun with it. But at the same time, he does have some pretty heavy baggage that he does need to deal with one way or another. And that, you know, you probably don't have to scratch that deep to get into some, you know, pretty painful stuff for him.
Yeah.
So,
I think the hope, from my point of view, is hopefully Mark Waid balance the light and dark a little better than I think had been done previously. For me, Daredevil kind of felt like a book that had been written into a corner, and something kind of needed big to happen. But it just feels so fresh reading this.
Yeah.
How did you feel about in the backup story about Matt picking up the fiddle and teaching himself in a couple of minutes to play the fiddle?
Honestly, it took me a couple of reads to even get what was happening on that page. I'm like, so wait, how do we read this? You know, it's like, is it one of those, you know, scenes where you read it like first one page and then the other, or am I supposed to read across the entire spread, or how does this work? And I'm thinking, okay, so are there like three trains passing by, or are we just seeing the train? Oh. So anyway, I thought way too much about the mechanics of that scene. I'm like, what's going on here? But yeah, I do think that's pretty cool. I doubt it's something that, I think that he has this skill is probably a separate skill. I don't think super hearing will actually make you better at learning instruments. But we do know, if you've read every issue, Matt can play the piano, and he can read music. well, not while playing the piano, sadly for him, but you know, so he does have some kind of musical training, which I think probably helps. So,
well, yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine who teaches the piano. He claims that once you've learned to play the piano, you can pick up almost anything straight away. So
yeah,
maybe
that's the answer then to this riddle. Yeah, but I think it has more to do with it, you know, maybe a musical gift than super hearing.
Of course, Daredevil, as with many modern comic books, has a letters page again. I don't know if you saw on Twitter today, I managed to somewhat put my foot in it. Because I assume you've read the letters page.
Yeah.
And Alice, who I know you know well, yeah, through, or reasonably well through Twitter, and I've spoken to on occasion on Twitter, has, in fact, I think it's the first actual letter.
Yes.
Is it not? That's published in the new Daredevil. I mentioned on Twitter how much I enjoyed that this morning, and Alice wasn't aware.
I know, but you weren't the first to point that out either, so don't feel bad. Lots of people are like, oh, hey, Alice, you're on the letters page. So I saw her like respond to several people like, oh, I didn't know, oh, I didn't know, oh, I didn't know. So yeah, within like 10 or 15 minutes, she had like 15 people tell her, or not 15, but quite a few. I think so. No, she didn't know. She's actually out traveling. I think she mentioned she is going to be at the Grand Canyon today. So that sounds pretty cool too.
I don't feel so bad now, but it's very cool for her.
Yeah,
That she's got the first book in. So overall for you, a satisfying reboot, or it's a soft reboot, really, isn't it?
It is a soft reboot. It is very satisfying. I was going to say that I was surprised by how far they took it, really, which, as you mentioned, to me, it is very, very refreshing. And at the same time, it is very, I like how it's obvious to me that Mark Waid approaches this thinking, I'm going to write the Daredevil that I always wanted to read.
Yeah.
And he's going to only pay as much attention to what has happened in the most recent past as he absolutely has to, is what I think. You know, like he needs to, for the sake of continuity, for the sake of longtime fans, to sort of reference this and to sort of, and I think it's interesting that he's one way he's doing this, of course, is by not really, so far anyway, talking much about Shadowland at all and talk about the details, more talk about where he's referencing sort of the emotional context of what's come before, you know, and not, he's not really talking about the technical aspects of it, which I think is smart because it pains me to say it, but you know, Shadowland is one of those stories I sort of wish had never happened, you know? So in my mind, I'm gonna, you know, I've never had a problem doing that with comic books. Like I said, you know, you go back to Daredevil number 2, landing Reed Richards' rocket in Central Park. As far as I'm concerned, between us, that never happened. You know, it's something I can't, you know, we like, if you have 45 years of comic book history, they're bound to be like really nutty stories out there that just don't make sense and don't gel at all with what your modern, you know, interpretation of a character is. And it's perfectly okay for writers to sort of pretend that never happened. Of course, it's harder with something that's as recent as Shadowland. But I think Mark Waid would probably find a very good balance between satisfying the need for continuity, especially emotional continuity, as it appears to be, and sort of just moving on and writing what he wants to write, which I think is important. And I think if you know, one thing that every comic book writer, every comic book writer should write the book that he wants to write, not what he thinks the fans will want or what he thinks he should be doing, or in order to, you know, pay tribute to someone else, say Frank Miller. I think that he needs to write what he wants to write, and that's how it's going to turn out. You know,
I couldn't agree with you more. I think the way you talk, there's one thing around that subject I always think about is in the back matter of the Grant Morrison's X-Men run in the trades. There's his manifesto that he wrote to Marvel, and there's one bit that always sticks in my mind when he's talking about what he wants to do, and he addresses the criticism, and he says, fuck the fanboys. And I think, you know, what he's saying is exactly what you were saying there, and I think you're absolutely bang on the money, is when a writer is writing what they want to see, that's when the best work is created.
Yeah.
Not when you're trying to pander to what you think others want to see. I think you're not alone in wanting to pretend Shadowland never happened.
No.
I think there's a few of us that read it would like to purge that from our memories. Jane, as a brand new reader of Daredevil, do you think this book's hooked you?
I think it has. Yeah. Getting past the first part where he says today, I just thought, wow. I was really taken aback about how much I really enjoyed it. And then the rest of the story, it was just brilliantly pitched for someone who hadn't, as Christine's enjoyed it, for someone who does enjoy Daredevil, and for someone like me who's only just really got into Daredevil. So it worked both ways. So yeah, I love the artwork in it as well. It's really good.
That makes me very happy to hear, because it's no, really, it's what Daredevil, I mean, comics in general, is what you need. You need new fans. You don't need to, you know, just please a smaller group of readers. And especially, like you said, you know, James, fuck the fanboys. I mean, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, I mean, I have a blog where I voice my opinions, but even I would want a writer to go within himself or herself and pick out, you know, like find the story that they want to tell. And so important. But yeah. I also think that one of the ways that this issue really succeeded was just making both old fans feel at home and being really welcoming to new readers. So I'm super happy that Jane liked it, and, you know, welcome to Daredevil.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, once upon a time, not even that many years ago, I'd never even heard of the character. And you know, and like a few months later, I was hooked. I wanted to read everything. Mm. So he is a very, very likable character, especially for people who, if you like, you know, comic, if you like superheroes who are not very superhero-y compared to others, and who are also flawed in every way imaginable and very human. And it's got a great cast of characters, and I mean, Foggy is a wonderful part of the supporting cast. I'm very much looking forward to also all the new people they will be adding into the cast, because I think that's a very good way of being, you know, invigorating a series, is to have, I mean, yes, the title character remains the same, but he will have new people to sort of bounce his personality off of, and people from various different contexts. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the conversation that Matt had with the guy who sold him his cup of coffee. I think that was really, really fun. I mean, a very real, genuine, like, you can, I mean, I could totally picture that happening. I mean, of course, it had, you know, the beautiful artwork, but even seeing that happening, you know, in real life, and getting kind of the vibe between them, I thought that was great.
I think, to be honest with you, it's one of the most accomplished and satisfying mainstream or big two books I think as I've read in ages, to be honest with you. I'm staggered how much I enjoyed it. And I'll be honest, I think if DC, during their reboot of the entire universe, you know, if any of their books are even half as accomplished in terms of what they've managed to do with Daredevil here, then I will be a very happy DC fanboy, I have to say. It was an exceptional book.
Yeah, it really was. I'm so happy. Especially, it seems, I'm just so, I'm thrilled to be reading, you know, Mark Waid saying things like, you know, this is the most fun I've ever had. you know, writing a character, and he's talked about how Captain America and Daredevil were his two, have always been his two favorite characters, and he, you know, it's like, even though he's such an accomplished writer and he's done so much, I genuinely feel that he is super excited about this. I mean, it's like not, I mean, of course, every writer in an interview will, you know, they're not going to tell you like, ah, I feel so about this gig, you know, it's a pace rep, you know. no one's going to do that. But at the same time, you do feel that he does have that that extra bit of enthusiasm that tells me that he's really genuinely super, super thrilled to be writing this book. And it really shows. It shows that he loves it. It shows that he's got a clear vision of where he wants to go. And so, yeah, very exciting. And also it's fun to see this being so much of a team effort, because it seems that both Paulo Rivera and Marcos Martin have been very much involved in, you know, like, because as we've talked about, you know, you need his senses to kind of come across on the page in a certain way. And you need to sort of, if you're going to rethink the concept, you need all of those pieces in place. And it feels like a real team effort in a way that, of course, it always is with a comic book. But I mean, it can be more or less. I mean, you can either have a writer who just sends off a script and then have someone draw it, you know, but here they've taken it a step further. And which is really fantastic.
Cool.
Well, I think that's three thumbs up then.
Yeah, six thumbs up.
All right, yeah, no, I should put both up, should I? Sorry. I'm very lazy. No, it's one of those moments where I'm so glad I read a comic book, and I'm so glad I read comic books, because I, it was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on Daredevil. I appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me. And we had estrogen dominated Momcast this time for the first time, I believe.
It is.
Yeah. It makes a nice change. Maybe that's why I spent most of the podcast completely discombobulated.
That's the beast, James.
I love that word, by the way, discombobulated. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. It's my, obviously my latent sexism was bubbling to the surface. Traditionally, we talk about what we're going to do with our weeks next week, but I think before we do, we should probably say that there will be no Momcast next week. We're having a week off. Nick and I will both be on holiday, and you've booked a session in an isolation tank, haven't you, James?
Yeah, it's part of the therapy. You know, part of working with James and Nick is that you have to go intensive treatment once a month.
Right.
I thought it's just you saw the Daredevil movie and you thought it was a really good idea. So I'm going to be in rain-soaked Devon while Nick's sunning himself in Lesbos. So yeah, we won't be back until the Thursday after next. So you're welcome to send contributions. We just won't use them next week. So that's what I'm doing with my next 2 weeks, is I'm going on holiday. Jane, what are you going to be up to?
Well, who knows? A whole week, no Momcast. I will probably go and see the most recent Harry Potter film next week. Ooh. Deathly Hallows Part 2, I believe it's called. I can't remember. I can never keep up with their names.
And what about you, Chris? What is your near future?
I will be going back to work next week, middle of next week. So. Yeah, I know. I'm not really looking forward to it. It's been nice having some time off and, you know, sort of catching up and like I said, cleaning out the closet and doing all those things and hanging out with my very adorable cats and like telling him how fun I am. But I mean, it'll be fun. I'm going to have some, you know, have drinks with a friend on Saturday and doing things like that. But I don't have anything big special, anything big planned. I did, however, this is in the far future. I am going to New York Comic Con.
I read, yes, yeah. Very exciting.
Which unfortunately means I can't go to Thought Bubble because I can't.
Now, Chris, can I ask you honestly, was your decision swayed by the fact that I can't make it to Thought Bubble this year?
I didn't
you
know.
Can be honest.
I didn't know.
No, that's not what you meant to say. That's no good for my ego at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just very honest. I'm very honest. I say whatever's on my mind. No, but does make me feel better about it, because I was really bummed that, because we had such a great time last year and I really wanted to do it again. And then at the same time, ever since I got heavily into comics, I wanted to go to one of the big cons. And for me, I would much rather go to New York than San Diego. I mean, number one, it's cheaper, not maybe to find accommodations, but to just fly over. Number two, I love New York. I've actually been to San Diego once, and I still like New York better. So for New York, I mean, to go to New York Comic Con, you can go to the Comic Con, then you can, you know, go have coffee in Central Park. You know, you can do other things too. So
is it fair to say as well, from what I can make out, it's a less Hollywood dominated event as well?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I haven't looked at the schedule too closely. I guess it's still sort of, you know, falling into place, but it just seems, I just felt like I love New York as a city and I wanted to go. And so, yeah, so I decided to go, and now I booked that ticket and I have a hotel room and feels great. And I mean, you can go just by base, even though with time difference, it's still not very far compared to flying, cool, you know, onto the West Coast, which is a much, much bigger deal.
Yeah. I'm very jealous. Yeah. I'd much rather go to New York Con than San Diego myself as well. I am very jealous.
Oh, I'll take some good pictures, and if you want me to go say hi to random people for you, I will.
Oh yeah.
Oh gosh, sorry. Definitely. What did I say? I shouldn't have offered. No.
Random people. Sounds good.
Oh, I will definitely find some random people for you to say hello to. Don't you worry about that.
Maybe at Mount.
That's very.
More like such and such person's going to be there. Like, get me an autograph. You know.
Well, what we should do then? We should all agree to meet at Thought Bubble at 2012.
Yes.
Then.
Yes.
Make a date for that, and then we maybe can get some feedback from your mum about how the London Olympics went as well.
I'm sure you will probably have survived the Olympics.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Maybe. If any country can cock them up, it'll be us, I can assure you. It'll be good. Okay. I can't believe we're talking about the Olympics. Yeah. That really is dicey. Okay, Chris, thank you very much for coming on. It's really good to talk to you, especially the week that Daredevil came out. It's excellent to have you on. Thank you very much for that. Thank you to everyone who's contributed to the pod tonight. That's very much appreciated. Don't forget, our 100th Momcast will be in 5 weeks' time. Is that right, Jane?
That sounds about right.
I can't remember the date. We mentioned it last week. It's towards the end of August. It's not too late if you'd like to contribute. I think the two things we were suggesting, if you wish to contribute. Welcome back, Christine.
Bye.
The two things we were suggesting, if you want to contribute, is either maybe do normally we say if you can keep your contributions quite short, but we were suggesting maybe if you want to do a pastiche of the podcast and send it in to us, something like that, or if not, if you want to join in and talk to us live during the 100th show, let us know and we'll give you some details of how you can do that. So that would be very good. I think we said the theme was going to be we're talking about our favourite comic book developments over the last couple of years, didn't we? That's what
was it in the last year, or the last couple of years?
Last 2 years. Well, it's 2 years we've been doing it now, almost. So it's the last 2 years, because everything before the Momcast counts for naught.
Nothing existed until you arrived to talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the new year zero, 2 years ago. Yeah. When we take over the world, Christine, finally, I think you'll find that calendars will be adjusted accordingly.
Sounds good.
Okay.
So I society.
Oh, Christine, absolutely. There will be a prime position for you in our brave new world. I can assure you that.
That sounds good.
You can have Sweden as well. We're going to let you have that. And Canada.
You're going to just appoint me to be in charge of it.
Yeah. Yeah, Chief of Sweden and Canada. That's going to be your job. The great hockey nation. Okay, well, thanks again, Chris, for coming on. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I think that's us.
Thank you, contributors.
Contributors. We'll speak to you again in 2 weeks, yes. I guess. OK. Okay then, thank you then.
Bye
bye. Okay, guys, thank you very much.
Did you hear that? Steve's bye-bye.
Was that Steve? I thought Christine was putting on an incredibly deep voice then.
He's so proud of himself as well.
That was Steve. I'm like, where's that extra voice? I thought it was like James doing it twice, and I'm like a different, from another distance.
I'm leaving that in.
No, that's just endorsing what he did.
No, I'm leaving it in. That's the... To be honest, I'm going to be up till midnight editing. It's ages since I've edited one of the podcasts. I can't remember how to do it.
You're going to get half a day tomorrow, you're fine.